Georgia's DBHDD is urging people to ask a pharmacist about getting naloxone for their first aid kits at home or work. No prescription is needed. Naloxone can rapidly reverse an opioid overdose and restore breathing. Opioidresponse.info.
Welcome to the Georgia Today podcast from GPB News. Today is Friday, April 26th. I'm Peter Biello. On today's episode, Jewish students respond to campus protests over the war in Gaza. Vice President Kamala Harris makes plans to visit Atlanta next week, and we'll hear part two of my conversation with the author of a new biography of Carson McCullers. These stories and more are coming up on this edition of Georgia Today. Jewish students at colleges around Atlanta are responding to protests on their campuses over the war in Gaza. GPB's Sarah Callis reports a rally last night followed a clash earlier in the day between police and protesters at Emory University.
By Thursday evening, a pro-Palestine demonstration on Emory's campus had ballooned to several hundred people.
Intifada Revolution!
Emory University law student Avita Kessler-Godin says that she has watched every pro-Palestine demonstration this year. She wishes protesters could hear their slogans the way she and other Jewish students do.
I always ask myself if it was their sister, if it was their mother, if it was their 85-year-old grandfather or 9-month-old baby brother taken hostage to Gaza, how would they feel? How would they feel? Would they still be chanting for the destruction of the state of Israel?
While Kessler-Godin says that the Emory administration has made her feel safe as a Jewish student, she felt that the police force used against campus demonstrators was, quote, unnecessary. For GPB News, I'm Sarah Callis in Atlanta.
Vice President Kamala Harris will be visiting Atlanta once again next week. Harris is kicking off a nationwide economic opportunity tour Monday with a series of events focused on investing in communities, building wealth, and ensuring every American has the freedom to thrive. Her visit comes shortly before President Joe Biden will deliver the commencement address at Morehouse College, a speech that's been met with some resistance. Georgia Southern University is responding to student concerns after web pages and signs pointing people to LGBTQ supportive programs and resources were removed from campus. University officials say the online notices were removed because of a website redesign, and those signs were removed because they were out of compliance with new university system policies. Georgia Southern senior Jill King is not convinced.
This has been a consistent issue of we're going to silence this. We're going to silence this community, but we're going to do it quietly. But I do know that students are going to keep showing up. They're not going to stop saying gay.
King is one of the organizers of a sit-in planned for Monday at the campuses in Statesboro and Savannah. University President Kyle Marrero says there has been no change of services offered to students. The Fulton County judge presiding over former President Donald Trump's Georgia election interference case will face just one challenger in his re-election bid. A DeKalb County judge yesterday upheld the disqualification of a candidate who had planned to run against Judge Scott McAfee. Attorney Tiffany Johnson was disqualified to run for the seat after she failed to appear at a hearing on a challenge to her eligibility. That leaves McAfee with a single challenger, civil rights attorney Robert Patillo, in the nonpartisan race to be decided on May 21st. The Fulton County district attorney prosecuting the case, Fonnie Willis, faces two challengers. Georgia's blueberry growers have voted to extend a $5 per ton assessment on marketed blueberries for 3 more years. The Georgia Department of Agriculture said yesterday that vote in March by more than two-thirds in favor continued the assessment, which goes toward research and promotion of Georgia blueberries. The assessment was first enacted in 2008. Georgia blueberries were a $450 million crop in 2020. South Georgia's Bacon and Appling counties were the biggest producers. Metro Atlanta is getting $1.5 million to make the region's transportation infrastructure more resilient in extreme weather caused by climate change. The Atlanta Regional Commission's Danny Johnson says one focus of the U.S. Department of Transportation grant is roads and flooding.
We're going to get higher levels of floods, and so that puts the crossings of those rivers and streams at greater risk to our transportation network.
Extreme heat also can impact rail traffic. Solutions could include road and bridge retrofitting and new design standards. More affordable housing is coming to Augusta. State and local officials in Augusta joined developers in a groundbreaking ceremony yesterday for a $17 million four-story apartment complex. Lennox promises to transform a vacant property in downtown Augusta into 64 units. It's named after a former theater that once served the city's black residents and was torn down in the 1970s. Occupancy will be restricted to renters who earn 30 to 80% of the area's median income, or up to $54,000 for a two-person household. Seniors at a high school in Southwest Atlanta have been given a series of surprises this week. GPB's Amanda Andrews explains they're all aimed at enriching the futures of graduates of Benjamin E. Mays High School.
Atlanta restaurateur Pinky Cole Hayes, founder of Bar Vegan, says her foundation will sponsor the Mays High School senior prom on Saturday. Plus, upcoming graduates of Mays High School are also automatically admitted to Morris Brown College. Derek Bozeman is a Morris Brown alum and former Atlanta City Council member. He says the work University President Kevin E. James is doing is remarkable.
I'm sure there are other college presidents saying, we should have thought of that. But the wonders of Morris Brown is that it has always been a visionary institution that looked to the future while still reclaiming the glory of his past.
The admission deal applies to the entire class of nearly 300 seniors, so long as they have above a 2.0 GPA. For GPB News, I'm Amanda Andrews.
If you like hearing the news from around the state here on Georgia Today, you'll probably like hearing how Georgia's agriculture economy feeds the country and the world on A Fork in the Road. I'm David Zelsky, and on the Fork in the Road podcast, we feature stories from Georgia's farmers, fishermen, merchants, artisans, chefs, and others who help provide Georgia-grown products to folks in the Peach State and beyond. Find it online at gpb.org/podcast or download it on your favorite podcast platform.
Governor Brian Kemp brought his bill signing tour to Brunswick yesterday, signing a package of measures related to coastal issues. House Bill 1341 declares the white shrimp Georgia's official crustacean. Kemp signed a bill to boost the Savannah Convention Center's bonding capacity to $400 million, another bill updating hunting and fishing regulations, and a third creating a statewide program for local development authorities to assist property owners with financing. Kemp has until May 7th to either sign or veto bills passed by the General Assembly this session or allow them to become law without his signature. After her husband died, Carson McCullers found her health worsening and alcohol playing a greater role in her daily life. But she still worked, producing plays and even a novel meant to comment on racism in the changing American South. Biographer Mary V. Dearborn's recent book, Carson McCullers: A Life, explores her life and legacy. In the second half of our conversation, we'll talk about those parts of her life, as well as her deep need for love and attention.
She was extremely needy, okay? And she's this, as you can imagine, your first impression, which would be correct, was of this independent, brilliant woman who's made her own way somehow. And, you know, that would be right. But because of her illness, and also I think because of the way she was raised by this an extraordinary but somewhat smothering mother, she saw herself as somebody who could do anything and yet was tremendously dependent and came to be. She had two major strokes by the time she was 30, and they really affected her really badly, and she became even physically dependent on other people. But she did have a thing. She loved touching, and she loved to use the word love. And it's true, I love that fact that she liked going to doctors because they touched her. I mean, she was a very needy, loving. I guess I prefer the word loving, but needy, dependent person, kind of like a eternal child.
Mm. One of her best friends was the playwright Tennessee Williams, and she cared a great deal about what he thought about her, and they talked quite a bit. And he said something about her in a letter that I wanted to bring up to you. And you quote him in saying, "When you remember the poetry of her work, you feel differently about her, appreciate her isolation and her longings, and you forgive her selfishness." And that was something of an experience that I had while reading this book, like, wow, Carson McCullers seems like what you'd call today high maintenance, right? Like she's a lot to handle. Yeah. She has a lot of demands. She's a house guest that kind of doesn't know when it's time to leave.
Right.
But if you know how beautiful her work is, you kind of forgive her for
all
that.
Yeah. Oh, definitely, for sure. And Tennessee, you know, they talk about as people who are close to, we should live together. You know, we should get a place together in Rome. And Tennessee would write to his friend saying, I really hope she doesn't take me up on that. But he also, you know, he had that sister who was, yes, I guess was schizophrenic and had a lobotomy. And he was very close to her, and he remained close to her, and he took care of her. And Carson kind of filled that same role. And Carson would say, you know, I can't wait to meet Rose. I'm just like Rose, you know, and in very different ways she was. There's a story that I love about Tennessee Williams, and I can't do a Southern accent, so you have to just hear it in your head. He brought her for a birthday or something, a couple of lovebirds in a cage, and she, you know, enthused over them and whatever, and they had their visit, and he was leaving, and she said, you know, Ten, would you just take those birds, please? And Tennessee did, and he understood, and he liked the story because it's very Carson.
Yeah, it was the quote in the book. I might be misremembering it, too, but she said something, can you please take those silly birds out of here or something like that, the silly birds. And I'm thinking, Tennessee Williams just brought her a gift.
Yeah, I know.
And she's saying, let it go.
You have to hear that in a Southern accent. But, yeah, it was a complicated relationship. Also, you know, Tennessee had his own immense problems, and yet because of that, they really bonded. He was probably closer to her than anyone but the people she was in love with.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So
yeah, and he was a big presence in the last 15 years or so of her life after her husband died by suicide. Her last novel, Clock Without Hands, it seemed like she worked on that for quite a long time through the tumult of the 50s and early 60s. And it took an anti-racist, you wouldn't call it that at the time, but it took kind of an anti-racist point of view. What do you make of the significance of a white Southern woman of her stature at the time, because her name was in demand still at that time in her career, a white woman from the South writing about race?
That's a good question, because it's not the best of her novels. It's quite good, but it's for various reasons, mostly her health. Her writing was falling off a little. Not everyone agrees with that, I should say, but it's a very curious approach to race. There's a character in there, I just like this, who's black and has blue eyes. And the anti-hero, who she clearly loved creating, is a judge who had been a member of Congress and wants to roll back time to the days of slavery. And his specific plan is to reintroduce Confederate currency. And, you know, he's an awful person, and the blue-eyed black guy is related to him, and it's about the Old South meeting new realities. And it was, in a way, a brave thing for her to take on.
You mentioned her illnesses. Her illness, which started with strep throat very early in life and wasn't treated the way it would be treated now, so it led to rheumatic fever, which led to strokes, which by the end of her life progressed so that the left side of her body was not really working, and she was possibly going to have a leg amputated.
Yes.
So her physical abilities were really, really limited towards the end of her life, and she did not look good. Her friends remarked on how bad she looked. And I was thinking about all this, and then also how much she drank and how doctors would say, don't drink, and she would completely ignore that advice. And I just kept thinking, you know, she's only 50 when she dies. And a lot of her life was consumed by bad health. Do you think about that, like what her productivity would have been like, or what more she could have written if she had just been able to kick the alcohol habit?
Yeah, I mean, what's lost is just incredible. And really, her writing starts falling off around age 35, you know, and
it's so young.
It really is young. So we think of what, you know, what might have been, but yeah, she compounded the problems she had from her stroke, with alcohol. I mean, it becomes a vicious circle, of course, because she's in pain, she drinks, it helps somewhat, and then that just snowballs. Unfortunately, the people around her didn't say, Carson, you know, you're drinking too much, you have to stop, starting with her family, who were all heavy drinkers, except maybe her brother. But her sister, who she was very close to, was in AA. Reeves was intermittently in AA. But nobody said to her, I don't think anyone said, Carson, come to a meeting with me. You know, Carson, she was a genius, and you didn't want to mess with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mary Dearborn, thank you so much for coming in and speaking to us about Columbus native Carson McCullers. Really do appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. I enjoyed it.
The weather's looking good for this weekend, with sunny and temperate days expected. Perfect weather to enjoy some outdoor festivals here in Georgia. So here's just a few for you to consider. There's the Vidalia Onion Festival in Vidalia, the annual springtime event which celebrates Georgia's official state vegetable. Events will include an onion eating contest, an onion recipe contest, and a public tasting. There's also a rodeo, if that's your thing. That's all happening in Vidalia this weekend. For more information, visit VidaliaOnionFestival.com. This is the last weekend for you to experience Dino Fest. This kid-friendly annual event features, among other things, a dinosaur-themed lantern parade, meet and greets with real dinosaur characters, and a dinosaur-themed dog show that runs until Sunday night at Stone Mountain Park. There's a Sassafras Artisan Market in Clayton. This event by the North Georgia Arts Guild brings together some of the finest artists and artisans in North Georgia for a fun, family-friendly art experience. You can shop for a gift or just take a look around. Browse the 100 merchants featuring painting, photography, woodwork, jewelry, and more. That's Saturday and Sunday in Clayton. There's the Rose Show and Festival in downtown Thomasville. This has been a Southwest Georgia tradition for more than 100 years. There will be flower shows, an artisan market, an antique car parade, and more. Don't miss it. That's Saturday and Sunday night in Thomasville. And finally, there's the 37th Annual Woodbine Crawfish Festival. Attendees can enjoy crawfish dinners, live music, and arts and crafts booths. There's also a parade and a 5K walk, and it all takes place on a beautiful waterfront in Woodbine, Georgia. That's happening tonight and tomorrow night in Woodbine. For more information, visit woodbinecrawfish.com. And that is it for this edition of Georgia Today. If you want to learn more about any of these stories, visit our website, gpb.org. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast. We'll be back in your podcast feed on Monday. And if you've got feedback, we'd love to hear from you. Send us an email. The address is georgiatoday@gpb.org. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next week.